Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. The Affordable Care Act, popularly known as Obamacare, passed in 2010, and we're about to enter our fourth cycle of open enrollment under the ACA, that time of year when we think about re-upping our health insurance, changing how we handle it, or perhaps buying some for the first time. The recent news that Aetna, one of the nation's largest insurers, is pulling out of several markets, including Oklahoma, prompted us to delve deeper into the causes of disruption in the health insurance marketplace and to try to better understand what's going on around us. Mike Rhodes, Deputy Commissioner of Health Insurance for Oklahoma's Insurance Department, has been on the regulator side of the business for 5 years after 25 years in the private market with Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oklahoma. Rhodes brings a level-headedness to explaining complicated insurance concepts and is able to understand the nuances of policy while not overlooking the big picture. Mike Rhodes is my guest today on Studio Tulsa Medical Monday. Mike Rhodes, welcome to the program. I want to start just by asking you to review with us the Affordable Care Act. It was passed as legislation in 2010, but really most of it wasn't enacted till 2014 when people were, the mandate, so to speak, went into effect where people had to buy health insurance for the very first time. The Supreme Court, it was challenged in the Supreme Court, but the Supreme Court said the mandate could stay. But what surprised many people was that the Supreme Court said states do not have to expand their Medicaid pools. And so let's review. So in Oklahoma, we don't have a state exchange. We have a federal government-run exchange.
Yes, and it's called the Federally Facilitated Market, FFM. And predating the actual start of the FFM here in Oklahoma, we had a series of health reforms that took place, and those kicked in prior to, actually in 2013. Some of those were long sought after reforms that many in both the industry as well as in the general public wanted. For example, forever and forever, there was an exclusion for pre-existing conditions. The Affordable Care Act began to phase those out, and so now there is guaranteed issue of health insurance in the individual market. Age 26 dependents was another one of those large changes that allowed dependents up to age 26 to stay on their parents' plans. And then there were also changes with respect to inside limits. For example, there could be an inside limit of $1,000 on a given benefit or a $1 million lifetime maximum on your insurance policy. All of those went away. And so we came into the first cycle of the ACA in 2014 with those reforms in place and began to actually have carriers, private carriers in the industry, participate in the exchanges all over the country. Now, some of those were state-based exchanges, but predominantly nearly 35 states participated in the FFM or the Federally Facilitated Marketplace.
And those the remaining states had their own state exchanges.
That is correct. And of course, they went to the expense and effort to build those exchanges. And really what that an exchange is, it's a platform both to enroll and then to the financial mechanism behind the scene to pay claims, even though those claims are paid by the insurance company. So a considerable expense to those states to build their state-based exchanges. And I will tell you that some of those have failed. They never performed well. And when they finally made the decision, they opted to go to the FFM. And you will recall back in the early days of 2014, the federal exchange did not launch as easily as everyone had anticipated. There were problems. You couldn't call in. There were delays. There were issues with respect to transferring data and actually determining eligibility for individuals, either through the IRS to determine income levels or through the immigration services through those federal agencies to determine whether or not you were eligible. Those got worked out, predominantly because they brought in some private sector people and fixed those IT problems.
And those, I mean, you were being, I think, generous, if anything, because healthcare.gov was a fiasco. There's really no other way. I mean, it was a disaster. It was never really beta tested. I mean, I guess it was in like limited trials. But I remember we on Medical Matters interviewed Sherry Gleed, who is an assistant secretary for planning in Health and Human Services. And she talked about the mistake that there was no iterative process, and there should have been some coaching. And actually, you mentioned this, that there wasn't a lot in the way of education about the Affordable Care Act. I mean, it sort of hit the ground running after a contentious political battle, and so consumers were left sort of being told, well, you have to buy insurance, good luck, in a way.
Yeah, you know, we observed this firsthand as the first cycle of the ACA rolled out in 2014. We waited anxiously to see what the federal government was going to do with respect to some sort of consumer education on this. And it was late in the game. It was we had the open enrollment begin on November the 1st of 2013 that ran through the middle of, I think, January of 2014. And there was very little education that was provided. Now, part of that was supposed to be performed at the navigator level or at the carrier level. But by and large, we had that first cycle, 2014 cycle, with consumers that were poorly educated with respect to what the ACA was. They understood the mandate. If I don't have health insurance, I'm going to have to either pay a penalty or something bad's going to happen to me. And yet we still see remnants of that also going into 2017, this fourth cycle of the ACA, where people still don't understand, well, what do you mean by deductible? What do you mean by coinsurance? And so there still is a widespread misunderstanding of what health insurance is. And of course, the population that we're dealing with here many times did not have health insurance. They were the uninsured that came into this new dimension of their life where they would have health insurance coverage, but they didn't understand it.
There was some news recently about Aetna, which is, I think, the largest or one of the largest commercial health insurers, that they have chosen to pull out of the exchanges in, I think, 11 out of the 15 states that they're in. And this was really a financial decision. They were losing money on the Affordable Care Act exchanges.
Yes, and this was a surprise to us. We had started at beginning in May with the announcement that Aetna was coming into the Oklahoma market to join the other carrier in this marketplace, which was Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Oklahoma. You recall that UnitedHealthcare had made the decision to exit. They were exiting all of their ACA markets. And we were pleased to understand that Aetna was coming back in because then we would have two carriers as a outlet, a retail outlet for people to buy coverage. But they made this decision about 3 weeks ago to exit all of their participation except for a few marketplaces. And this was really driven by the financial losses that the company was incurring. It was certainly a disappointment, and it leads us to a situation that we're going to be facing here in 2017 with only one private carrier in the FFM going into 2017, and that'll be Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Oklahoma.
Now, do you recall, it might not be fair to ask you, but how much money they cited that they were losing, I guess, nationally?
Yes. The number that was in the press was around $500 million. That was their expected loss for 2015. So that, they had incurred losses in 2014, and I'm sure they have incurred losses in this current period of 2016. So these are enormous losses, and I think that as cited by UnitedHealthcare, Aetna cited the same thing. Until there is some stability in this marketplace, where there is some predictability of the risk, we can't continue to operate like this. Our stockholders won't allow us.
And so the lack of stability in the marketplace is something that is challenging, to say the least. But is it to be, I guess, expected that when the rollout of the Affordable Care Act, such a monumental piece of legislation, that there would be hiccups of this magnitude?
Or? Absolutely. Even though we have the actuarial sciences supporting the establishment of rates, it's not an exact science. There is a lot of art that goes right along with the science. And what really has happened beginning in 2014 and through the current period is that there has been an underestimate of the utilization by those participating in the ACA. That certainly has been the case here in Oklahoma among all the carriers that have participated. And let me recall for you that in 2014, we had six carriers out there that were participating, a couple of regional HMOs that have very strong medical management that control costs. We had other PPO networks. Those are preferred provider organizations that simply have a broad network. It's not as narrow as an HMO. But shortly after the financial results came in for 2014, we were down to three carriers. And once again, that was driven by financial losses because the rates were essentially underrated with respect to the risk that they were taking on. And going into 2016, this year, we're down to two, and that's United Healthcare, who once again is exiting this coming year, and Blue Cross and Blue Shield. So it's been a lessening of competition here in Oklahoma. There's no doubt about that. But it's also the reality that companies cannot sustain these huge financial losses because it impairs their balance sheets. It impairs what we call, as a regulator, their risk-based capital. And when that falls below a certain level, the regulator steps in and begins to take some actions with respect to what a company can sell and cannot sell. Now, frankly, we don't have anybody in that situation, but a long period of losses, as has been sustained over these last 3 years, cannot go on forever.
Now, we also see a lot of headlines along with Aetna. I mean, if you just go on the Google News headlines, I mean, for almost every week, at least in this part of the year, as we gear up for open enrollment, which starts, as you point out, in November, there are stories about different insurers or different, consumers, really, patients, seeing rate hikes. And I guess, as you've pointed out, it's been very bumpy. So where at least in the initial years of the Affordable Care Act exchanges, it seems like, you know, we didn't have the data necessarily to know how sick people would be that were buying into insurance for the first time. So in essence, there's been this large market correction, and we're seeing these double-digit rate increases again, which is causing a lot of skeptics to say, sort of, see, I told you so, the Affordable Care Act is something that can't work or is unsustainable. I mean, from where you sit, how do you react to that sort of comment?
Well, they certainly are coming in for 2017 at very large levels. We understand that the current time frame that there will be not only double digit, I mean, it's in the 40s and 50s. Oklahoma is not unique to that. Recently, I think in the last couple of days, the Department of Insurance in Tennessee approved a 40-45% increase. We know that rates in Texas for some of their plans have been filed at 60% rate increase. So this is indeed the correction that you mentioned, and it will continue on until there is some equilibrium achieved with respect to where the rates are set and what the utilization is. And when we get into that area of equilibrium, rate increases will diminish considerably. But we're not there yet. I think the carriers are still struggling to pinpoint where this utilization is coming from and to what degree. We know that prescription drug is driving an awful lot of that. We know that there was a tremendous amount of cost related to hepatitis C drugs that this new population came in and they were put on this drug. That's a very expensive protocol. It improves people's lives tremendously. But we're still in the process of making sure that all the data that we can use can then predict what the utilization will be, and we'll get into that period of equilibrium. But until we get there, we're going to see these 40 and 50% rate increases.
So, and I want to clarify something else with you that I think is less well known, but these massive rate increases really are affecting a smaller number of people than we might think via the news headlines. And that's because people that are buying insurance through the exchanges but qualify on an income basis for subsidies are essentially, I think you described it as a push. They're seeing their rates increase, but they're getting a subsidy increase to match.
Yep.
So it's not costing them anymore. And that's, at least in Oklahoma, that's a significant percentage of people on the exchange. So maybe can you give an example of how that would work?
Sure. And once again, we're talking about what is referred to in the industry as the retail market. It's the individual market. You're not seeing these kind of increases on the group side of the business, and certainly not with self-funded groups. So as we isolate down on the individual marketplace, for a 40-year-old male in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that is a non-smoker, may have a pure premium rate of $300 a month. Depending upon that individual's income level, certainly if it's below 250% of the federal poverty level, they will receive a substantial subsidy called an advanced premium tax credit when they buy a silver plan that allows their out-of-pocket premium expense to be in the $30 to $50 range. So essentially, this $300 insurance policy costs them about 10%, between 10 and 12% of what the pure premium costs. Additionally, as you move through that federal poverty level schedule, there is help with deductibles and coinsurance and other out-of-pocket expense. These are known as cost-sharing reductions that are available also to these individuals. So not only do they get the premium assistance, the subsidy, they also get help paying for their co-pays when they go to see the doctor. Or if they have a deductible, and many of these plans have very large deductibles, they receive financial assistance from the federal government on those also. So it is certainly designed for a population that is along the guardrails of the federal poverty guidelines, and we have about 150,000 individuals here in Oklahoma that have coverage through the on-exchange portion of this business. And about 90% of those, about 135,000 of those people, receive these subsidies. So it's very beneficial to them. But once again, it is a small portion of the population that qualify, and those that don't qualify based upon their income are called participants off the exchange, and they're paying the full price.
Wow. So that group, probably, I'm guessing here, middle class, are really feeling that pinch because they're paying the full brunt of that rate increase without any subsidy.
And those premiums are going up to $800, $1,000, $1,200 a month. They have no assistance coming from under the ACA to help them pay for their deductibles, their coinsurance, or anything else. And they have very large deductibles. Many of these family deductibles, family of four, will have an $8,000, $9,000, upwards to $12,000 a year deductible. And sometimes that's just, you got to throw your hands up in the air and say, how can I pay for this? So it's difficult.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest today, Mike Rhodes. He's Deputy Commissioner of Health Insurance for the Oklahoma Insurance Department. And we're talking really about an update on the Affordable Care Act and its impact specifically in Oklahoma. And we were talking about people who are buying health insurance on exchange and off exchange, a population that Mike described, about 150,000, 90% of whom do get a subsidy through which they're not actually having to pay these very significant insurance rate increases. Mike, I want to ask you about another population, the Medicaid population. This is a sort of contentious issue in Oklahoma because the Affordable Care Act law was predicated on the idea that most states, or that all states, in fact, would vastly expand their Medicaid pools with federal dollars in order to cover, the uninsured or the poor, and vastly diminish the number of uninsured Americans. And we've seen this really, the data bears this out. In states that have accepted Medicaid, they've seen the generalized rate of uninsurance, if you will, 15% of the population, go well down below 10%. We've seen maybe a tiny amount of this in Oklahoma, but of course we have not, for a variety of reasons, accepted federal dollars for Medicaid expansion. And so who is the Medicaid population, or who theoretically would be? Because if you're at a low income level, right, you'll qualify for a subsidy to buy insurance on the exchange. But I imagine part of that problem is the sort of the publicity and education, is folks not knowing they're eligible in a sense.
Indeed, that's the case. And the Oklahoma Healthcare Authority has done a tremendous job in trying to educate individuals that may be eligible for Medicaid coverage. Now, once again, there are restrictions with respect to who is eligible for Medicaid coverage. I think the enrollment in the Oklahoma Medicaid program has reached the 900,000 citizen level, which is a tremendous number of people that are on Medicaid coverage. Many of the working adults don't qualify. Now, the expansion program would permit them to come on to Medicaid benefits. At this point in time, as we have observed at the Oklahoma Capitol, there continue to have the debate whether or not this would be good for Oklahoma, and whether or not in the out years after essentially the percentages change, right? The year one, I believe, is 100% of the expansion costs are borne by the federal government. That graduates down over a three-year period. And the real question that I think the Oklahoma legislators are struggling with is, what does that really mean long term? Are we going to bite off too much, and then are we going to have to not be able to meet those obligations. We have seen most recently in this last session where there was called a Medicaid Rebalancing Act that was put forth by the healthcare authority, failed to get through the legislature simply because there were other problems. Now, I think eventually that was solved. They came up with the money. They kept everything the same. But obviously, in the absence of having sufficient dollars, what happens are reimbursement levels for providers continue to go down. There's an impact there. There is then at times, notwithstanding the fact these are small business people that run, you know, their practices. Sometimes they can't afford to treat at a significantly reduced reimbursement level some of the Medicaid population. So it is an issue. It continues to be an issue, and I think that it will still be front and center as we go into the 2017 session over in Oklahoma City.
This might be a naive question, but if the state expanded Medicaid and you had many more individuals eligible to receive Medicaid, arguably, you know, is a subsidized program, which is mostly borne by federal tax dollars. Would that help our community rating as far as when we're seeing Blue Cross and Blue Shield, for example, raise, ask for a premium raise of 40 to 50%? Would having more Oklahomans covered by Medicaid, in a sense, level the playing field and lessen the impact? Or am I thinking incorrectly about that?
It would have an impact. How significant, I'm not sure. But as we know now, the current model, when there is uncompensated care delivered at a hospital or by a physician, that cost is simply passed on. It's cost shifted, as we call it in the industry. It's cost shifted to the people that buy insurance and pay for their insurance. Many times this is an employer-sponsored plan, but if I bought insurance on the individual marketplace, part of that cost would be shifted to me and put in my premium to pick that up. So, you know, to the extent that it has some impact, the real impact going into 2017 on the ACA rates would be as impacted as much as what the total utilization that we see from this population that is currently under Affordable Care Act coverage, what their utilization is and the underlying cost of that population. Now, once again, the prediction is that at some point in time, the data is good enough. You're going to figure this out. You're going to price it appropriately. But we're still in those growing pain years where we got to figure out where do these premiums really need to be.
I wanted to, Mike Rhodes, ask you about your career. So you've been with the Oklahoma Insurance Department about 5 years. But before that, you worked for a large insurer, Blue Cross and Blue Shield. Was it of Oklahoma or national?
No, that was the Oklahoma local plan.
And how do you get into health insurance?
Well, that was I fell into that after the banking crash in the mid-80s after Penn Square failed. I was in banking for 10 years. Those jobs pretty much dried up, and I was interested in risk, so I went to work for Blue Cross and Blue Shield, really on the operational side, and I grew to understand how risk pools work, how rates are developed, how the interaction between provider networks and the consumer and the insurance company work, and it's been a marvelous career from the standpoint of 25 years looking at all the changes that we've seen. So I did that for 25 years, and then I took a little bit of time off, certainly with under the pressure of my wife asking me every day, what are you going to do today? So I went back to work as a regulator. Some people said, you know, you're going to the dark side. It's been these past 5 years, certainly driven by the ACA events, have been the most interesting of my career. So I'm looking at close to 30 plus years in the health insurance industry. And these certainly have been the most interesting ones in my career with respect to health insurance. And I think that they will continue as we go through this evolution over the next several years.
Yeah, I mean, you seem to have a great attitude about it. I mean, after having had a long career in the private sector to then work with a regulator at a time of incredibly tumultuous change you seem very to have a lot of equanimity about the whole thing and not to get – I'm sure you could easily be very frustrated by it or, on the other hand, trying to regulate it and where people are on all sides of it are so frustrated with it.
Yes, and you know, we have a unique situation here in Oklahoma in as much as we are called a direct enforcement state. So we, the state of Oklahoma decided back in 2010 that as they saw the ACA coming, Obamacare coming, they decided we're not going to play with this. We don't like it. There was a lot of contention. Back in that day, you might recall that there was a federal grant made to the state of Oklahoma to build an exchange. That $54 million was returned to the federal government. So we are called what is in the parlance a direct enforcement state. We do not perform any planned functions for the FFM, the federally facilitated marketplace. So it's to the extent that we're not behind the scenes in the nuts and bolts. It's been much easier to observe and to follow and to help where we can develop policy. And there's certainly plenty of regulatory activities going on in the group market, in the long-term care market, in the PNC market that I have a touch in. One of my direct responsibilities is I am in charge of the Consumer Assistance Division for the Oklahoma State Department, and we get to see all kinds of issues brought to us by consumers. As a matter of fact, we worked one today on an air ambulance bringing a four-month-old back from Boston to Tulsa. And you know, that's complicated, but got the agreements between the parties, and I think that later this afternoon the baby's heading back to Tulsa.
Wow, I mean, so that's seeing the consumer side of it has to be fascinating, and I'm sure probably a lot of complaints. I guess I would ask you sort of what sounds like a silly question, but what's the biggest misconception that people have? I suspect, especially consumers, about the insurance industry or health insurance specifically.
Well, they think that their insurance company is evil and is doing them wrong. We can point to the fact that many of the domestic companies that we have here in Oklahoma are not they're for profit, but they are non-investor owned companies, which means that they're mutual companies. The policyholders own them. That certainly is the case with many of the health insurance companies that we have. And I would reference Blue Cross and Blue Shield, Community Care, Global Health. These are mutual companies owned by the policyholders and for the benefit of the policyholders. So the misconception and really the sometimes the anger that's expressed by a consumer who has a problem is that they're treating us unfairly. We're pretty impartial about this. We look at contracts all the time, and we talk about exclusions, or we talk about things not covered under a policy, under a homeowner's policy or an automobile policy. So there is a lot of education that takes place with respect to the Consumer Assistance Division, but also it's being fair primarily to the consumer, but also fair to the company also.
Well, Mike Rhodes, it's been very enjoyable talking to you. You really know the material, and it's great to have an update about the Affordable Care Act here in Oklahoma. So thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Dr. Schumann.
Mike Rhodes is Deputy Commissioner of Health Insurance for the Oklahoma Insurance Department. Well, that's our show for today. Studio Tulsa Medical Monday is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views expressed by our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening.